Now, here's your host, Katie Comley.
Good evening. Coming up on the program, researchers at UBC have discovered why cancer cells can hide from our immune system, and BC residents are left in the dark after a fierce storm Sunday night. We'll have all this, plus sports and your five-day weather forecast coming up this half hour right here on News 101. Researchers at UBC have uncovered a mechanism that creates an invisibility cloak for certain cancer cells, allowing them to hide from our immune system. Professor Wilfred Jeffries and his team found that metastatic tumors, which are cancers that spread from their primary site, can evade the immune system through a process called chromatin remodeling. The invisibility mechanism operates in malignant forms of cancer, including ovarian, prostate, melanoma, and cervical cancers, and is particularly active in breast and lung cancers. Human DNA is packaged within each cell by chromatin, which is made up of DNA that encases proteins called histones. The UBC team discovered that in tumors, a process called chromatin remodeling changes the structure of chromosomes by altering the histone codex, or instruction manual, of the DNA. Because this alteration reduces the creation of receptors that display cancer-specific signals recognized by the immune system, the cancer cells become invisible to the immune system, and no defenses are mobilized. Jeffrey says that within 5 to 10 years, the findings may lead to new therapies that will force the cancer cells to drop their invisibility cloak and be recognized by the immune system. Now with a look at other local news, here are Carrie Baptist and Tracy Fuller.
BC Hydro is struggling to restore power to 100,000 customers on the south coast after the intense storm that hit the southwest coast of BC Sunday night. Winds as strong as 110 kilometers per hour were recorded near Abbotsford, but areas such as Vancouver Island and the Fraser Valley were hit equally hard. BC Hydro is asking for patience as their crews are scrambling to get power back on for all customers affected by the storm. In addition to BC Hydro's complete workforce, private contractors have also been hired to get the power back on even quicker. According to meteorologist Russ the Cat, winds should be dying down throughout the day today, so BC Hydro will be potentially able to restore power to all its customers.
Vancouver City Council is set to vote on the Project Civil City report tomorrow in order to decide whether to adopt the report as a framework for further civil city work. The project was meant to address social problems in Vancouver, including homelessness, panhandling, drugs, and mental illness, in advance of the 2010 Olympics. However, opposition councillors are claiming the $300,000 spent on the report was a waste of taxpayer dollars. Vision Vancouver councillor Raymond Louis said that the report was merely a list of social problems and the government agencies trying to solve them. Louis stated the final recommendations were too soft to be useful. NPR councillor Kim Capri defended the Civil City project. Capri countered that the report should list what's happening in the city because it's the commissioner's mandate to coordinate various levels of government to target public disorder. Capri expects that tomorrow's council will vote to endorse the report.
Opposition MLAs are demanding the government increase SkyTrain security, particularly in the Vancouver East Side. MLAs Mike Farnworth and Adrian Dix say the number of SkyTrain police officers should increase by 50% and a boost in security after hours at all stations is needed. They also suggest implementing a walk-home program at 5 high-risk stations, a program similar to the AMS Safe Walk here at UBC. Farnworth and Dix add the government should build turnstiles from provincial coffers instead of looking to private companies, as Transportation Minister Kevin Falcon suggested last week. There were a number of violent attacks in SkyTrain stations earlier this year. Dix says it's absolutely necessary to improve security at SkyTrain stations if they expect the public to use the system. But the will and commitment from the Campbell government is just not there.
The rising cost of patrolling the Granville Strip is prompting Vancouver City Councillors to propose a year-round increase in funding for the Vancouver Police Department. According to the Vancouver Police Department, the force does not have enough resources to adequately deal with the violence and disorder on Granville without compromising coverage in other areas of the city. They are asking for $210,000 to fund a special squad of officers year-round, as well as a one-time increase of $220,000 to fund summer street closures like the ones which were effective this past summer. Along with the budget increases, the City Council is recommending an increase in business license fees for bars open late at night from under $5 a seat to $12.
A group of Vancouver sex trade workers wants to open a co-op brothel in time for the 2010 Olympics, and they are seeking the federal government's support. The BC Coalition of Experimental Communities is made up of male, female, and transgendered sex workers. The group has managed to get some political support so far, including that of Mayor Sam Sullivan, who believes a brothel run by the workers themselves would help reduce violence against them. However, Sullivan doesn't believe that the co-op brothel would address his main concern of the women of the sex trade who need help with their addictions and who he believes won't be let into the co-op. Group member Susan Davis says they are seeking an exemption given to them along the lines of what was given for the safe injection site. She believes tens of thousands of men who visit during the Olympics will be searching for sex here in Vancouver. It's time for a quick break, but stay tuned to CITR for more news following these public service announcements.
Interested in NGOs or the nonprofit sector? Want to teach in another country? How about a position in the commerce or engineering sector? Do you want to travel abroad and have a life-changing experience? Isaac UBC offers different internships for all kinds of specialties. We are looking for students interested in fields such as the HIV/AIDS pandemic, community empowerment, business administration, education, environment, and sustainability, and much more. If you're interested in working abroad or helping out on campus, please contact ubc.aiesec@gmail.com. That's ubc.aiesec@gmail.com. It's up to you.
Are you a UBC student taking first year economics, math, chemistry, or physics?
That stuff is hard.
Are you feeling like you need some tutoring? That's okay, because the AMS offers free and appointment tutoring for students in these subjects.
Whoa! How does it work?
It's on a first-come, first-served basis, and there's no need to sign up. Just show up with your books and your questions.
Whoa! When does it happen?
Monday to Thursday from 3 to 7 at the Sub Pacific Spirit Cafeteria, located beside the Starbucks.
Whoa! A+, here I come.
This is News 101, and the current time is 5:08. The fallout from the Hollywood writers' strike is making business difficult for the BC film industry. With more on that and other provincial and national news, here are News 101 reporters once again, Tracy Fuller and Carrie Baptist.
The Screen Actors Guild is issuing a warning to Hollywood studios in regards to laying off or suspending actors during the writers' strike. This is in response to action taken by Sony Pictures Television. The company has put regular sitcom cast members on unpaid leave as shows are shutting down as a result of the writers' strike. The strike began on November 5th when talks between the Alliance of Motion Pictures and Television Producers and the Writers Guild of America broke down. The main issue at stake has been the residuals for writers for materials on DVDs, the internet, cell phones, and other devices. Now the Screen Actors Guild is saying that putting its members on unpaid leave violates previous agreements. The writers' strike has had a significant impact here in Canada, British Columbia, and Vancouver in particular. As production companies run out of scripts, more Vancouverites will be out of work as many television shows are filmed here are beginning to wrap. The booming film industry in Vancouver may be simmering down.
A report into the effects of climate change on BC real estate was presented last week by the David Suzuki Foundation. The study found that extreme weather events could affect the design and location of new developments and alter real estate prices. Climate change is expected to raise building costs as new building standards for increased resilience in the face of extreme weather are required. The report also predicts a shift towards more compact and less land-intensive forms of development due to a growing demand for energy-efficient practices. BC has recently seen many examples of how climate can affect property. Homes in the Mission and North Vancouver area have been hit by landslides, and houses in Tawasin have been plagued with flooding.
A new study conducted by the Dominion Institute and Ipsos Reid suggests that young adults in Canada know very little about Canadian history. The study found a decline in Canadian history knowledge since a similar study was conducted 10 years ago. Most of the respondents of this year's study failed the 30-question quiz, which contained the same questions as the 1997 study. Only 46% of participants were able to correctly identify John A. Macdonald as Canada's first prime minister, compared to 54% in the 1997 study. Less than half of the Canadians could remember the year of Confederation, which is 1867. Of course, there were some areas of improvement. More young Canadians could remember key facts about Canadian military history, including what day the First World War ended and the name of key battles involving Canada's in the war, including Vimy Ridge. Overall, young adults in Saskatchewan and Manitoba scored the highest on the test, with those in Quebec scoring the lowest.
The soaring Canadian dollar is beginning to show signs of weakness as it continued to retreat today. This after record highs against the U.S. dollar. On November 7th, the loonie reached $1.10 U.S. and has dropped more than 7 cents since. Economists say our dollar has been losing ground to the American dollar on the account of the American dollar finding some footing against the euro and the U.K. pound, both of which have been retreating. The vice president at TD Securities in London says the pressure to cut the interest rate by the U.S. Federal Reserve will probably help to curb the loonie's slide. He also said a slide such as this is only natural when the pace of appreciation for a currency is so rapid. There was no official close from the Bank of Canada today because it was closed for Remembrance Day.
Liberal leader Stéphane Dion is calling for an inquiry after allegations involving former Prime Minister Brian Mulroney and his dealings with German-Canadian lobbyist Karl-Heinz Schreiber arose Saturday. Schreiber filed an affidavit in Ontario court Friday, claiming that he had negotiated a $300,000 lobbying deal with Mulroney during his final days as prime minister. Schreiber also claimed to have transferred funds to a Mulroney lawyer based in Switzerland in connection with an Air Canada purchase of Airbus airplanes in 1988. Schreiber is being deported to his native Germany this Wednesday, where he will face charges of bribery and fraud. The Liberal leader decided to call an inquiry after media reports showed that Schreiber had written a letter to Harper about his dealings with Mulroney in March of this year, but did not respond to the situation. Dion says the close ties of Prime Minister Harper's government with Mr. Mulroney make them unable to assess the situation objectively. And in international news, anti-war vets have won a victory with the recent ruling regarding American soldier and deserter Lieutenant Aaron Watada. Sarah Olson from FSRN reports.
A federal district court in Tacoma, Washington, issued a preliminary injunction last week in the case of U.S. Army First Lieutenant Aaron Watada, the first commissioned officer to publicly refuse to deploy to Iraq. The injunction found Lieutenant Watada's defense was likely to succeed on merit and that the military judge abused his discretion in Lieutenant Watada's court-martial. An increasing number of Iraq War veterans have expressed their support for Lieutenant Watada and welcomed last week's news.
The message is very positive.
Camilla Mejia is the chairperson of Iraq Veterans Against the War.
I think people are really afraid of taking a personal stance when they are in the military, and here we have the first commission officer who at great risk took a public personal stance on the war, calling it illegal and refusing to deploy.
Lieutenant Watada was charged with missing troop movement and conduct unbecoming an officer and a gentleman for publicly explaining the reasons behind his refusal to deploy to Iraq. His case has been in legal limbo ever since last February's court-martial ended abruptly in a mistrial. Lieutenant Watada's lawyers have argued Fifth Amendment protections against double jeopardy, being tried for the same crime twice, applied in Lieutenant Watada's case.
I was there at his court-martial and saw how biased the military court was.
Kelly Doherty is the executive director of Iraq Veterans Against the War. Doherty says, unfortunately, the real issues, whether the Iraq War is illegal, and what soldiers must do when they believe they've been given an illegal order, have not yet been heard in court. Other observers are simply happy the questions have been raised at all. Paul Sullivan is the executive director of Veterans for Common Sense.
We hope that other active duty officers and soldiers will be able to follow his courageous example and clearly state that the war that President Bush started in Iraq was based on lies.
The federal court will issue a final ruling in upcoming weeks, but it's increasingly likely there will be no second court-martial for Lieutenant Watada. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Sarah Olson in Oakland.
And thanks to Free Speech Radio News for that piece. And we have an additional international piece. The Sudanese government has silenced protesters with tear gas following their opposition to the current genocide in Darfur. FSRN once again reports.
Estimates of how many people have been killed in Darfur vary. Low estimates are still in the hundreds of thousands. Abdallah is a doctor in Sudan. He says he estimates almost 3 million refugees are now in displacement camps. Abdallah says the Sudanese government blocks free travel of international groups, which has forced many aid groups to leave. He says the consequences of this are dire.
And that's the consequence, is that the people will become more vulnerable to diseases and malnutrition and other diseases. So they are going to be dead before actual deployment of international power. We need an urgent deployment to protect these people.
Sudanese President Omar Hassan al-Bashir has said he will now allow UN peacekeepers into Darfur, but the question of funding is still unanswered. And once funding does come, it will still be many months before the full force gets to the region. Susanna Serkin is the Deputy Director for Physicians for Human Rights. She says the UN forces are needed now.
They really do need protection before they can go forward with a proper peace negotiation. And there is this question out there as to what comes first, peace and then a ceasefire and then protection, or protection and then peace.
Serkin says no peace negotiation will happen until there is international protection for the people of Sudan. She says world leaders have dragged their feet for too long, and that now is the time to save more innocent civilians from the ravages of war.
The UN resolution is passed. The Sudanese government has agreed to accept the force, and really now it's a matter of the nations of the world and with the UN coordinating this, getting the troops and equipment in as fast as possible.
2 weeks ago, peace talks in Libya unraveled when three rebel leaders failed to show. Dr. Abdallah says the people of Darfur need to be protected so that they can join in the peace talks without fear of speaking their minds.
For me, there is hope in saving people of Darfur, but it needs collaboration from all parts. To me, to protect the civilians is the key to the solution of problem of Darfur.
Abdallah is in the States to receive the John F. Kennedy Human Rights Award for the medical work he has done in Darfur. He says another part of his visit is educating leaders on how best to bring peace to Darfur. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
And thanks to Matt Laszlo and Free Speech Radio News for making that piece available to us for rebroadcast. It's time for another break, but there's still much more to come on News 101. When we come back, Jeff Sargent is going to tell us what's happening in UBC Athletics. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
What do you consider art?
Oh, I got a good answer for that. And I've thought about this for years. My definition of art is anything that anyone creates that invokes a reaction from someone else, even an animal. That's art.
Population of Noise presents Symphonies of Time, a series of music and visual performance works on November 14th and 15th at Vivo Media Arts Center, 1965 Main Street, Vancouver. Wednesday, November 14th, enter the acoustic, ambient world of Tim Gerwing and spacey guitar loops and sequenced soundscapes of Anomalous Disturbances. Also, see the live visuals of Cinecita on Thursday, November 15th. PON presents the tribal rhythm spirit of special guest performers Pepe Danza and Navarro Franco, and the debut of music and art ensemble Paradigm Shift, featuring U.S. interdisciplinary artist Laura Lee Coles. Doors open at 7:30, showtime 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. Symphonies of Time, November 14th and 15th at Vivo Media Arts Center, 1965 Main Street. Brought to you by Population of Noise.
Art's also a friend of mine, a Mexican guy, nice guy.
All you people care about is readers and making money off of her. She's a human! Leave Britney alone!
If you don't want to miss your favorite CITR show because it makes fun of the spiel, then you've got nothing to worry about. Now you can get all of the CITR 101.9 FM radio shows off our website and download them straight onto your computer or MP3 players. just visit www.citr.ca/podcast and dive into a pool of all of the past radio shows, such as...
Because all you people want is more, 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 more! Leave her alone!
All to your little heart's desire.
What is that? I know what that is. That's music.
For $15, the Friends of CITR card scores you in-store discounts at Beat Street, Red Cat, Vinyl, Scratch, and Audio Pile. Support Vancouver's finest indie radio station and pick up your card today.
What do you want to do with your life?
I want to rock.
The Leo Ramirez Show, the best mix of Latin American music, news, sport, and commentary from around the local and international Latin American communities. Saturday, 5 to 6 p.m. at CITR 101.9 FM. El show de Leo Ramirez, la mejor mezcla de música, noticias, deportes y comentarios de la comunidad latinoamericana. Sábado de 5 a 6 de la tarde en el 101.9 FM CITR.
Stressed, anxious, lost? AMS Speakeasy Peer Support is here to help. We offer free and confidential support to all members of the UBC community. Located at the north entrance of the sub, we offer drop-in peer support, information, in-person and email referrals, and operate an after-hours crisis line. Call 604-822-3700 for support, or check out ams.ubc.ca/speakeasy for further information.
Welcome back to News 101 on CITR. I'm Katie Comley, coming to you live from the Student Union Building at UBC. Thanks for being with us tonight. Right now, it's 5:22 and time for a look back at the past weekend in UBC Athletics. Here's Jeff Sargent with Thunderbird Ion Sports.
Thank you very much, Katie. The UBC men's soccer team claimed their record 11th national title yesterday afternoon, defeating the Laval Rouge et Or 2-1 at Wolfson Field. The Sam Davidson Trophy win is also UBC's second in 3 years, as Thunderbird's defender Graham Smith was voted tournament MVP. The Birds advanced to the final game thanks to a thrilling 2-1 overtime win over the York Lions Saturday night. The two teams were in a scoreless draw until a Ben Hunt bicycle kick strike gave UBC the lead and the eventual win.
I've tried it messing around with my friends and sort of indoor games, but never in a big game like this.
Earlier Saturday, Laval defeated the Western Ontario Mustangs 2-1 to set up the gold medal match. UBC came out storming in the first half of yesterday's final, dominating play in the attacking zone while also preventing Laval from creating any scoring chances. After several shots on Laval goalkeeper Francis Real-Roberge, Smith opened scoring in the 23rd minute, sending a Steve Frazel free kick into the net. The Thunderbirds continued to press hard, but solid play from Real-Roberge, who had 4 saves in the match, kept Laval in the game. 11 minutes into the second half, the Rouge et Or got the equalizer as Gabriel Moreau deflected a shot past UBC keeper Serjan Jankovic. The goal appeared to give Laval a boost as their tempo immediately picked up and finally began to challenge the Thunderbirds' defenders. But in the 82nd minute, Frazel put the game away, taking a pass from Canada West Rookie of the Year Jorge Angel Mira and put the ball past Real-Roberge off the left post. Frazel on the big goal.
Jorge chipped it through. It was a beautiful ball into space. It just set up perfectly for me, and closed my eyes and hit it. No, we've been coughing it all weekend. We knew the ball was starting to bounce right for us, and we knew it was going to happen.
Graham Smith on the team effort that got them the win.
Looking around the group, there's so many older guys. They've been here before, and we had that quiet confidence the whole way. As soon as the games ended at Trinity, we knew we could do it because we had two good games. If you look around, the group is 35 guys deep, and they're all young guys that can do the job too, so they're going to develop well. And I was there 2 years ago, and look at where we are now. So,
UBC head coach Mike Mosher was clearly pleased for all his squad, but especially for Frazo to go out on such a high note.
You know, I was so happy for Steve. He's had a tough season, but he just persevered and he kept going, and he gets it. And, you know, what a way. Fifth-year guy scores last couple minutes of the game on his birthday.
The game was also the last for midfielders Nico Marcina, Ben Hunt, and Mike Elliott, as they will graduate this year, leaving big holes for Mosher to fill for next season. The women's soccer team was at their national championships in Cape Breton, Nova Scotia over the weekend, winning bronze 1-0 over the Victoria Vikes in penalty kicks. UBC was dealt a shocking 2-0 loss to the host Capers in a semi-final match on Saturday, dashing their hopes of repeating as national champions. The host team went on to defeat the York Lions 2-1 in the final to capture their first ever Gladys Bean Trophy. UBC and Victoria were locked in a scoreless stalemate, forcing penalty kicks, where Thunderbirds keeper Jackie Dunnett stopped Victoria's final two shooters to claim the victory. Thunderbirds head coach Dick Mosher was obviously disappointed with the outcome, but says with the level of competition getting increasingly better at the university level, you just can't expect to win every year. After a loss to the Calgary Dinos last Saturday, the men's basketball team rebounded with a pair of home victories over the Fraser Valley Cascades on the weekend. After a 91-81 win Friday night, the Birds picked up right where they left off for Saturday's rematch, winning by a convincing 84-63 margin. UBC guard Blaine LeBranche led the Birds with 15 points Saturday, while Chris Dick chipped in 13 points and 4 rebounds. With the wins, UBC now sits tied for first atop the Pacific Division with the Simon Fraser Clan, both schools boasting 6-1 records. Next up for the Birds is a visit to Manitoba this weekend, where they'll take on the Westmen and Bisons before heading back to Vancouver for a 4-game homestand. The women's basketball team also had a successful weekend, completing their weekend sweep against the Cascades. Friday night's tilt had the Birds squash Fraser Valley 74-48, with Erica McGinnis leading the way for the Birds with 23 points, including 14 in the third quarter alone. Saturday's rematch was a closer affair, but UBC still came away with the 58-49 victory. Julie Little scored 17 points and added 8 rebounds for the Birds, while Leanne Evans boasted a double-double with 10 points and 10 rebounds. The now 5-1 Birds sit just behind SFU for top spot in the Pacific Division of the Canada West and will also take off on a Manitoba road trip this weekend. The tough times continue in UBC women's hockey. The Thunderbirds dropped both their games against the Cougars in Regina over the weekend, losing 3-1 Friday and 4-1 on Saturday. In the first meeting, UBC was outshot 35-19 by Regina, and despite improvement on defense, the Ladybirds couldn't come up with any offense when it mattered. Then in the rematch, the Birds dug themselves in a hole early as 3 first-period goals chased Melinda Choi from the game. Kirsten McAlcheon scored in the third, but it was too little too late as UBC dropped its second straight game to fall to 2-8 on the year. And as if things weren't bad enough for the Birds, this weekend they head to Edmonton to take on the Canada West powerhouse Alberta Pandas. They currently hold a record of 8-2. The men's hockey team had the weekend off, providing them a chance to regroup after 2 close losses to Manitoba a week earlier. UBC is in Saskatoon this weekend for a 2-game set with the Saskatchewan Huskies. The 4th-ranked UBC men's volleyball team continued to show its strength with a weekend sweep over the Manitoba Bisons. After winning in 4 sets on Friday, the Thunderbirds swept Manitoba in 3 straight Saturday to improve their regular season record to 4-2. T-Bird right side Andrew Bonner racked up 20 kills and hit for 42% Saturday, leading UBC to set victories of 25-22, 25-23, and 25-18. Steve Gotch recorded 12 kills in addition to the 11 he picked up on Friday. The Birds will look to continue their winning ways against the Saskatchewan Huskies in a pair of meetings this weekend at War Memorial Gym. We'll have the Friday tilt for you on CITR Live beginning at 8 o'clock. In women's volleyball, 24 hours after the top-ranked Manitoba Bisons defeated 3rd-ranked UBC in a thrilling 5-set match to remain undefeated, the Lady Birds answered back with a 5-set win of their own Saturday. UBC took the first 2 sets, 25-21 and 25-15, but needed 5 to complete the upset. Manitoba fought back to win the third 25-21, then pushed the match to the boiling point with a 25-21 win in the fourth. But UBC, which took a 15-5 beating in the fifth Friday, turned the tables with a 15-8 count on Saturday to earn the weekend split and improve to 4-1 on the year. Jamie Broder led all players Saturday with 17 kills for UBC, while Liz Cordonnier added 15. Danielle Peterson contributed with 16 digs, while Carla Bradstock posted 55 set assists en route to victory. The Ladybirds also square off against Saskatchewan this weekend. You can catch the Friday tilt here on CITR, beginning with our pregame show at 5:45. Immediately following News 101, the first serve goes at 6. That's your Thunderbird Eye on Sports for this Monday. Back to you, Katie.
And thank you very much, Jeff. So we're going to take another quick break before we wrap up tonight, but stay tuned for your your 5-day weather forecast. This is CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
Holy smokes, I can't believe I'm part of the coolest club in the world.
Bob?
Yeah?
So, what club is that?
CITR. As a club member, I get ginormous discounts on the Friends of CITR card, which in itself, Timmy, I must say, is pretty amazing. I get dirt cheap prices at stores and shops I'm at all the time anyway. To be honest, it feels like being in a club within a club.
Wow. Hey, I want a Friends of CITR card.
You don't even have to be a member to get one, although clearly you'd be that much cooler if you were a member. Go purchase your Friends of CITR card down at CITR, or at special events they sponsor, such as concerts, membership drives, and shindig.
I got it. It feels like having special powers. I go into stores and bam! Discounts.
Tis what I said.
Want to know what's going on around town? LiveMusicVancouver.com is the Lower Mainland's comprehensive source for live music listings. We've got more than 350 shows listed at any time, and our listings are updated continuously by hundreds of the very people who put on the shows you love. Artist information and MP3s are accessible right from the listings, as are maps and calendars for virtually every venue in the city. All this and tons more totally free at LiveMusicVancouver.com.
Welcome back to News 101. Before we wrap up tonight, we go to our meteorologist, Selena Ferris, for a look at your 5-day weather forecast. Selena?
There will be a nice start to the week, but conditions will get wet by the end. Tuesday and Wednesday are looking at a mix of sun and clouds, with a slight chance of showers and highs of 7 degrees. Thursday, a low will move into the area, causing rain showers Thursday and Friday. That's your weekday weather, brought to you by the Storm Club at UBC. For more information, you can email us at stormubc@gmail.com. Back to you, Katie.
Thanks very much, Selena. And that's our program for Monday, November 12th, 2007. Today's newscast was brought to you entirely by volunteer efforts. And if you'd like to share your comments, give us a hot news tip, or get involved with the show, contact us. Our phone number is 604-822-5334, or you can email us at news@citr.ca. Megan Turcotto produced this radio program. For more news, join us Friday at 5 p.m. for the next edition of News 101. For the entire news team here at CITR, this is Katie Comley thanking you for listening. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.